This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What a busy day. What a great show so far. Why? Because we've had great guests, not because of my insight. Mike Palm joining us last hour, Drew Dinsick, Ed DeRosa as well. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll chat with Jonathan Von Toll. We'll get his thoughts on tonight's Game 7 between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics. Two Game 7s tomorrow in the Eastern Conference. The only team to emerge out of their Eastern Conference first round, the New York Knicks. Not going to seven games, that is. The other two series in the Western Conference, massive, and I mean massive, series prices for the Oklahoma City Thunder, who opened minus 3,000 at DraftKings, the Lakers at 12-1, if you think they can pull the upset, and the San Antonio Spurs around minus 2,000 against the banged-up Minnesota Timberwolves. Is it inevitability that we get Spurs and Thunder? I think the answer is clearly yes. Are they going to take care of business promptly is maybe the better way to look at it. We're going to check in with Dwayne Colucci here coming up in about 5 minutes. I want to know his bets for the Derby. Dwayne, one of the best horse handicappers out there. Of course, you know Dwayne, working at the resort at Summerlin, odds maker. So we'll hear from him in just a moment. But before we get Dwayne's thoughts on the Kentucky Derby, and we've had a lot of people chime in on their favorite bets, and we'll continue to play you some of those clips throughout the show. I did want to mention a little bit more about Game 7 tonight. The market, the movement, where we're at right now. Boston, 8.5-point favorite across the market. Total sitting at 205 or 205 and a half. That tax that you're paying on a Game 7. Game 6, 214 and a half. Game 5, 205 and a half. Let's hear from Joel Embiid, who has really played quite well coming back from that appendectomy, as he, for the first time in his career, is trying to beat the Boston Celtics in the postseason.
I've been playing these guys for so long. I'm tired of losing to them. So we have a chance to accomplish, something special. I mean, they're a great team. And you look at everything they have. That's a super team, so we just got to go on those with the mindset we've had for the last, two games, last 2 games, and, one play at a time, tough environment, but we've been there, we won 2 games over there, so just keep doing what we've been doing, and we're coming far.
Doesn't feel like the confidence is all that high up in Boston. We talked to Brian Barrett, who covers the Boston Celtics as a podcast up in Boston as well, and he thinks the Sixers win this game. Now, I don't know if that's the pessimism creeping in, and I want to talk to JVT a little bit more about it coming up in about 10 minutes, because there's a thought of a market correction a bit here with the Boston Celtics. And look, I personally have a ticket on the Celtics to win the East at a bad price, because you could get it at much better right now. If they are to win tonight, which kind of feels like a big if based off of their last two performances, where they've not only shot poorly, but they've just overall played poorly. But if they are to win tonight, how much does the market shift from around plus 185 or so to win the East to where do we get to after, if they win tonight? But that seems to be a big if, right? Is Joe Mazzulla going to trust in some of the role players a little bit more? Is a Sam Hauser going to make some big plays? Is a Peyton Pritchard, who has had some monster performances, including in this very series? And can you see a sharp shooter like a Baylor Shireman have a Grant Williams type performance? Grant Williams back in 2022 had 7 threes in a Game 7 against the Milwaukee Bucks. So we will see if something like that comes to fruition here tonight. But right now, 8.5 is the number. And if you go over to VSiN.com, our betting splits as part of a VSiN Pro subscription. Right now, 63% of the bets and 68% of the handle is currently on the Philadelphia 76ers. As for the total, 63% of the bets at DraftKings on the over, 54% of the handle right now sitting there on the over as well. I would lean under, but it's hard for me. And I asked Mike Palm about this, during the first hour last hour was where are we getting attacks right now on that game 7 first period under in Montreal and Tampa Bay. And he said, usually during the regular portion of the year, you're getting a bit of a plus price. Now it's minus $1.35 or so. And on the flip side, you're talking about a game 7 tax here between the Sixers and the Celtics. So that is where we sit right now when it comes to the Celtics and the Sixers for game number 7 tonight. 2 game 7s tomorrow, Orlando and Detroit, Toronto and Cleveland. Right now, Orlando catching 8.5 against the Detroit Pistons. How do you respond if you're the Orlando Magic and what we saw last night? To have that type of a disaster in the second half, to score 19 points in the second half, how do you bounce back from that performance? Because part of me looks at the Orlando Magic and saying, they've been right there this whole series, but then there's the other part of me that looks at, all right, the Orlando Magic had a 24-point lead in a closeout game at home and blew it. And now you got to go on the road. And did you have your soul sucked out of you after squandering that lead? It is still one of the most mind-boggling performances to see a team go 45 minutes in real time without a field goal, missing, 24 straight field goals. And then we got Toronto and Cleveland. Toronto winning the game with the R.J. Barrett bucket with 1 second to go on the Tyrese Halliburton three-pointer, back rim up. Was it more Tyrese Halliburton or was it more Kawhi Leonard? Kawhi Leonard was a game 7, but think about Toronto and maybe the rim fortune that they've had in a game 7 against Philadelphia with Kawhi in the corner. And then last night with R.J. Barrett. So 3 game 7s in this first round, all decent sized spreads. It is interesting, all around 8.5 or so. So we're going to get an in-depth breakdown of those games coming up in just a little bit when Jonathan Von Tobel joins the program. I do want to pivot here real quickly because we were unable to catch up with our buddy Dwayne Colucci, but that's all right. Last hour, we did hear from Drew Dinsick, and he gave us some really good insight on how he's going to bet today's races at Churchill Downs, including the Kentucky Derby. So let's hear from Drew Dinsick, who joined us live from the Kentucky Derby last hour. I want to circle back to what you alluded to as the 9 horse, the Puma, was scratched this morning. Obviously, I know you work for NBC. There was rumors that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce had bought into that horse. So I'm sure there were folks on the television side looking to run some stories on it. But just from a betting standpoint, how much does that tweak things for you from a handicapper with the 9 horse being scratched?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the concept coming into this race when I got here on Wednesday was the Florida contingent is the strongest. That is Commandment, the Puma, and Chief Walby. There were people who I think were just going to play those three as a trifecta box and say, we're just going to rerun the Florida Derby here. Everybody else is, running for fourth. The Puma did not look great in the morning workouts, in my opinion. So I was actually not surprised that he was scratched. And I think Commandment also has some serious questions around him. He was the only horse that was not out yesterday morning during the typical Oaks Derby work time. Brad Cox snuck, Commandment out under the cloak of darkness at like 5:30 in the morning to try to stretch his legs yesterday. That was an unusual move. And he also did that with Prom Queen, who ran a pretty unremarkable race yesterday. So there may be something going on, maybe some signal there that Commandment is a bet against in this one. So if the Puma and the Commandment if the Puma and Commandment are both passes, then that just leaves Chief Wallaby standing alone as your top choice, I think. As far as like what it does to the odds pool, there was a dream world where every Taylor Swift fan who is betting the Derby for the first time and loading up their TVG account or whatever was just going to fire on the Puma, and it was going to close like a truly false favorite, like 3-1, and every other horse was going to be value in this race. The fact that that dream is over so early on the morning on Derby Day is kind of sad.
Drew didn't say great insight coming from him earlier today, and he really likes Chief Wallaby. There's a handful of folks who have come on VSiN this week and like Chief Wallaby. If you miss it, Ed DeRosa was just on with us a little while ago too, and he likes the 18 horse Further Ado, and is a big believer in emerging market too. So a couple of thoughts that have been out there, and going back to Drew, he believes it's a three horse field. The horses that he likes, he's going against the three main favorites of Renegade, Commandment, and So Happy. And he feels like, and I think the echo, the sentiment was shared by Ed DeRosa, believing that So Happy, the price on the eight horse is way too short. From Drew, Chief Wallaby, the 12, Emerging Market, the 15, and Dan and Bourbon, the 7, were the three horses that he was looking at. And Ed DeRosa, in addition to Emerging Market, which Drew likes as well, the 18 horse in Further Ado. Coming up later tonight, we get a Game 7 between the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers. Celtics lay an 8.5. Is that price too juicy? We'll break that game down. The two Game 7s tomorrow, and also take a look at the Western Conference semifinals. Jonathan Von Tobel joins us next.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Keep it rolling here. Busy Saturday. We've got a Game 7 later tonight between the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers. Two Game 7s tomorrow in the NBA. One Game 7 on the ice tomorrow between the Montreal Canadiens and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Game 1 of an Eastern Conference second round series starts tonight as the Carolina Hurricanes, pretty significant favorites over the Philadelphia Flyers. And of course, coverage all day leading up to the Kentucky Derby. Let's head to our progressive guest line and welcome in a gentleman that you know well, the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of Money Moves, joins us right now. And, you know, JVT, when you and I, many moons ago, used to host a show together, VSiN Primetime, we used to talk about the overreactions in the betting market, the tax that you have to pay. So I think you know where I'm going. Game 7 tonight, and the total in this series has kind of hovered around 214.5 or so, and right now market sits at 205.5 for this Game 7. Man, is this tax too much? Are you looking over here?
It's really tempting, right? I mean, so you're even talking about just the average total. The closing total, for those who don't remember, of Game 1 was 217, and here we are now for this game tonight. I think that I would lean a little over the total, especially too, Tim. Like, if you like Boston, one of the things that has to correct itself here is their three-point shooting, right? They have not shot the ball well in their losses in this series so far. As we know, they're a team that is a high-volume, high-efficiency three-point shooting team. So if the offense does find the course it should, then we should probably get this thing over a low 205. I understand everything that comes with it. It is a Game 7. It is winner go home. You will walk the ball up. You will overcoach. It will be possession to possession. So there's a reason why we are this low, but I'd be tempted to go over. And the other part of it, too, is, look, the Celtics have not really had an answer for Joel Embiid. And when he's working, it eats into the shot clock, and you're going to elongate some of the possessions. But I still think there's an offensive efficiency to be found when Embiid is working the way that he is against some of these centers. So I would tend to look over here. Like you said, you know, the tax, the overreaction, whatever you want to say, everything that you think you know about game sevens are baked into this number. And if Boston gets its way, then I do think that this is going to be a side that can get you over the total today.
So let's break down Boston here, because maybe I fell for it, but watching this series and looking around, I'm like, I just don't see a team that's better than them. And then games five and six happen. I'm like, oh, well, I feel like an idiot because I bet at a bad price for them to win the East. Right now, they're plus 180-ish to win the East. Do you, A, think they figure it out tonight? And do you agree with that sentiment that they are the best team in the Eastern Conference?
I think I agree. I mean, so we talked about this. There's actually, I think we have a video up on our Instagram page and there's somewhere else. But so we had talked about this when the series started. It's on Pod of the Future. So I've talked about it on the show with Stormy. I disagreed with how Boston was being priced in the Eastern Conference before the postseason started. They were being priced as this team that is head and shoulders above everybody else in the conference, when the reality was they were a stripped down version of the team from last year, obviously, that thought they had title aspirations. And while they made a really good run and exceeded expectations, I don't think that they should have been priced the way that they were, you know, minus 900 to win this series, for example, before it started. You know, like you mentioned before, the price they were to win the Eastern Conference. And so do I think that you could consider them the best team of the Eastern Conference? Yes. My question would be, like, to what degree do you think they are the best team in the Eastern Conference, especially with the way the East has looked right now? We have a growing sample size of data that all these teams kind of suck. Like, you could just throw them all in a hat and take one out and be like, hey, here's your Eastern Conference winner. Who do you think it is? And if you showed me New York, if you showed me Cleveland, if you showed me, hell, Tim, if you showed me Toronto at this point after watching all these teams, I'd be like, you know what? I can kind of see a path. So I think that they are the favorite, but I don't think that they're like the favorite, head and shoulders better than everybody else. And mostly because I just really like Joe Mazzulla. I think he is a good coach despite all of the criticisms that he is getting in this series. So I do think they are, but I don't think that they're priced the way they should be.
All right. Before we wrap things up on this game tomorrow, tonight, and then look ahead to tomorrow, anything you are looking to bet or have bet already in tonight's game seven?
Yeah, it's Philadelphia. I mean, I took the points of Philly. I don't think we're here at this point right now where these two teams are separated by that much. I mean, we're sitting here opening at 9, down to 8.5. I think 8.5 is playable, which is what I grabbed. It's just the market is showing that there is a wide gap here between Boston and Philly. I just don't think that's the case. I think we've seen enough here. So I think grabbing Philly plus the points is worth looking at.
All right, Jonathan Von Tobel at MeJVT is where you can find him. As he mentioned, Pod to the Future is the podcast that he and Mitch Moss host, and Money Moves weekdays here on the network. He and Stormy Bonantoni. All right, let's get to the two game sevens tomorrow. You know, I don't know what the hell I saw in that second half last night between the Orlando Magic and the Detroit Pistons. To see 19 points, as I've joked, 45 minutes in real time without making a field goal, it's just mind-boggling what we saw. So there's part of me that's like, I want to take the points with the Magic because I don't really trust this Pistons team to blow them out. But there's also part of me that's like, maybe the soul of the Magic got ripped out of their hearts because of what we saw unfold last night down in Orlando.
Dude, this is the one where if you wanted to make the – so if you remember, there was a couple of years ago where I believe it was Orlando and Cleveland, and they had played to a game seven on like on a Sunday. And that the total, if I remember correctly, in that game closed like 197.5. Why isn't this total 197.5? I mean, these two teams, man, they're awful on offense, and they are guarding the hell out of each other. I'm surprised that this isn't lower. You know, we at least know that in the game that we just talked about in Boston and Philly, there's the upside of the offense, three-point shooting. You have highly skilled offensive players. This series, I am really surprised that we're not starting to dip a little bit further. So I would not be shy about getting under 203 or 203.5 with this total here. But I'm with you. I mean, I do think that just generally both teams, this is I guess Orlando, it's been so bad throughout this entire season. Like, you're just numb to it and you move on. Same thing with Detroit. But this is a ugly game, and I'll just go back to it again. What have you seen from Detroit outside of this last game because of Orlando's failings? Like, I don't know, man, like 9, it seems like a lot. Yeah. It seems like a lot for where this series is played. Going into this game last night, Tim, the net rating for Orlando was just a +2. Like, they were up in terms of per 100 possessions. So I don't think that there's this gap between these two teams that the market keeps telling us there is. So I think I like under, but I think also, I mean, I would just ride or die with 9 here with Orlando and just kind of hope they can stay inside of it.
Yeah, it's like Dumb and Dumber. Risk we're willing to take. Toronto, Cleveland, 8.5 is the number, 211, 210.5. The game goes over because of overtime yesterday. But once again, game 7 tax for all of these, about a 7-8 point move here. Anything you like tomorrow night, Toronto and Cleveland?
Yeah, I'd lean over on Cleveland's team total, actually. So yeah. I think that, first off, shooting has kind of been the story here in this series up to this point. Cleveland, for whatever reason, has really struggled from beyond the arc in the road games out there in Toronto. If you look at the way that they have shot, 26.8% in Toronto last night, and then in the two games prior, 31.8%, 25.6%. In the games in Cleveland, 50, 32, and then 50 again. Like, they have shot way better in three games in Cleveland than they have on the road. So for whatever reason, that has worked for them. But they also haven't shown, Tim, at least to me, and I'm sure to you and many others who have watched, enough consistency on defense that I expect that they can win by margin. So I would just trust that their offense potentially can hit this mark. The shooting should correct itself. I think I'm looking at the market right now. Team total for them, I think I've got like 108.5. I think that's a fair ask here for Cleveland. You don't need the game to go over the total either, right? It's a game seven like you discussed. But I do think that Cleveland has shown more comfort at home on defense that I think I'd be willing to go over with their team total as opposed to lay 8.5 with them tomorrow.
JVT joining us here at MeJVT. Money Moves weekdays here on the network. And JVT, let's get to Tuesday night. The stat I saw last night, which was just mind-boggling, it is the worst of any playoff matchup in NBA history. What is that? +29.3. That was the differential in the four meetings the Thunder and the Lakers had. The series price opened up -3,000 for the Thunder. And if you're thinking, oh, I like the Thunder to win in, you know, five. Well, you got to pay, I think, -310 if you want to pull it, -2.5 games. How are you looking to bet Thunder and Lakers?
I mean, I think you're looking like some series spreads, like 2.5, 3.5 if you wanted to. This is somewhat non-analytical, right? But it's just, doesn't it feel like, man, like that was a big one where you're talking about LA, hey man, LeBron, you just need one, and then the reinforcements come, and then we can last in this series. And instead, you go up 3-0, you end up beating them in six, and now you got to go take on OKC, who's a little bit rested and ready to go and waiting for you in a matchup that's just not has not worked for you at all. I just think that there is going to be somewhat of a bloodletting here in this series, and I think we're starting to see here too. I mean, the top of the West, Tim, is so much better, it would seem, than the rest of the NBA. I mean, yeah. The Oklahoma City Thunder, the San Antonio Spurs, and then who else is there, given the injuries and the quality of play in the Eastern Conference? I think that this is just going to be a OKC San Antonio series, and I just don't think that LA matches up very well here. The perimeter defense is awesome. Reeves, still not 100%, is going to have to deal with whatever they throw at him in that backcourt, and there's just waves and waves of defensive-oriented guards. I think this is going to be a short series, and I think it's more than fair to look at LA for the Thunder to sweep this series here against LA.
Real quickly, Lakers team total unders, is that going to be a look in this series? How do they score against this Thunder defense?
I would agree. I mean, because here's the thing. If they were like Boston, where they were taking a ton of threes and just trying to ratchet up the variance, like we talk about in the NCAA tournament all the time, then like maybe you're going to be able to steal one of these things. But they just don't do that. They don't take a ton of threes. And there's times where they don't shoot particularly well either. And so if that's going to be the case, if you're going to rely on trying to get inside or going north-south like Austin Reeves, I just don't think that's really going to happen.
JVT, much appreciated, man. We'll hear you on Monday with Stormy.
Thanks a lot, man.
There he is. Jonathan Von Tobel breaking it down from the NBA. We got a lot more insight to get to. Kentucky Derby, Game 7, as mentioned. But we are getting closer to the start of college football. And you know this is a college football show. Turn the fall. Let's hit on that next.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Happy Derby Day. It is Tim Murray live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Later on this afternoon, leading up to and during the Kentucky Derby, we will have Mike Somich and Patrick Maher on these airwaves getting you ready for Derby Day. All right, we just heard from our guy Jonathan Von Tobel talking some Game 7 tonight. He likes the Philadelphia 76ers, and like most of us, fully anticipates the Thunder and Lakers to be a relatively easy win for the Oklahoma City Thunder. We've gotten lots of Kentucky Derby insight, and we will circle back to said insight to close out the show. But can I be selfish here for just a moment? I mean, it is my show. During the fall, this is the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show. We love to talk college football. I love the sport. So we're going to sneak in a little college football because you know what? We just had the draft, and we saw all that B-roll of college football. And it just, it got me fired up, man. I'm ready to go. 119 days from today, we will have college football in our lives. We are getting oh so close, boys and girls, but not too close. We'll have plenty of time of ramp up, plenty of time of win total bets, game of the year bets. So we're getting there. We're inching closer. And all that being said, the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, there is no offseason. And earlier this week, I checked in with college football handicapper Brad Powers and got a couple clips for you guys regarding teams that he is either curious about or one that he actually really likes in the futures market. Chalk this year, preseason, in no particular order, is Texas, Indiana, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, Georgia is kind of ish there at number six. So of those teams, which one jumped out the most through the spring to Brad Powers? And the team that he liked the most and he's willing to put a futures bet on, quack, quack, the Oregon Ducks.
I'm expecting a lot. I've watched about 20 spring games already, including a lot of the big boys, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Georgia, Oregon, Indiana. The team that impressed me the most, and I get it's just one scrimmage. It's just a very small piece of the puzzle. But the team that impressed me the most was Oregon. Just the overall depth across the board, starting at quarterback. I mean, I'm not a big Raiola fan, but I don't mind Raiola as my backup quarterback, not my starter. So that's not too bad. And I'm not even sure he's a slam dunk winner to win this backup job. That's how good they are at quarterback. Wide receiver getting Evan Stewart back, I think, is an underrated topic that's not getting appropriately priced in some markets. To combine with DeCorian Moore. They got a great 1-2 punch at running back. They were true freshmen last year. I expect them to be even better this year. Offensive line, again, could be a worry. Lose a lot of guys to the draft, and I thought they were a little overrated last year. Up front is where, you know, these national championships are won. Going back to when Saban started dominating college football 15-plus years ago. And I think Oregon, at least at their starting front four, is the best in college football. I was looking in the spring game to see what kind of depth pieces they had because their top four backups last year all transferred out. And they're going to be fine. They had a couple kids in the backup roles that looked better than the starters. So they've done an excellent job recruiting and developing there. Back seven's fine. And then the schedule, they'll be an underdog at Ohio State. Obviously, you can lose one now and still be A-OK in college football. If I had to make a championship bet right now, it'd probably be Oregon. First ever for them. And then, look, Lanning's been consistent. Mm-hmm. He's had some, you know, some duds, particularly in rematches. But I don't see many holes in this roster.
There you go, Brad. High on the Oregon Ducks. I thought the point that he made regarding Dylan Raiola is an interesting one because they've got this unique situation that they had 2 years ago when they had Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore on the roster. It didn't end up needing to happen, but having that safety blanket in a Dylan Raiola is a pretty nice luxury to have as a backup quarterback. Ask Texas Tech about their backup quarterback situation with everything unfolding regarding Brendan Sorsby down there in Lubbock. So you got the Oregon Ducks 8-1 to win the national championship at DraftKings. Right now, as I mentioned, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Indiana, Texas, Oregon, Georgia, all kind of in that upper tier, if you will, of futures odds for the college football season. And then in the next middle tier, if you will, you've got Miami, you've got LSU, A&M, Texas Tech, who I would throw out right now with Brendan Sorsby, Ole Miss, and Alabama. Alabama, heading into another year under Kalen DeBoer, made it to the playoff last year, even though they shouldn't have, got embarrassed in the SEC Championship, got embarrassed in the Rose Bowl. Ty Simpson becomes the 13th overall pick, I think, to surprise of many, but could you argue, even though Ty Simpson is gone, that maybe there was an upside at the quarterback position? Let's hear about Alabama heading into 2026 from Brad.
I think there's, you know, Ty Simpson just went, you know, 13, surprisingly. But I think there's, you know, the possibility of having more upside at quarterback, especially if they're healthy. Keelan Russell impressed in the spring game. I like what they have at wide receiver. So I'm expecting a pretty good passing attack. I mean, but Alabama's going to go as far as up front on the offensive line in their running game, because it was non-existent at the end of last year when they're getting drilled by Georgia in the SEC championship game and dominated by Indiana in the Rose Bowl. It's got to be better. It can only be better at how pathetic it was. But, man, watching the spring game, I didn't come away. Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be better this year. So that concerns me. I think they'll be a little bit better on defense. They were actually fine on defense last year. Schedule isn't bad. I mean, honestly, it would be a disappointment if they weren't 5-0 playing Georgia there on October the 10th. They're going to be favored in those first five games. If the new quarterback plays clean and stays healthy, I could see over 8.5. But I will say this, you know, I don't think they're a title contending. I mean, watching all those, you know, premier programs, top five or six that I did, Alabama's not one of those top five or six teams. So I think they're a playoff type team. They're just not a national title contending team. And that's not enough in Tuscaloosa.
And that's where we're at. Isn't that pretty wild? By the way, the full episode up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. Also, wherever you get your podcast, full episode, about 45 to 50 minutes with Brad. We went through a bunch of win totals that he liked, a couple of favorite win totals, off the radar, overrated teams. So some really good stuff, as always, from my guy, Brad Powers. And as he mentioned, Alabama, who, remember, opened up the season getting their butts kicked by Florida State, even though for some reason that week one game didn't matter, but Notre Dame's week one game mattered. I digress. East Carolina, Kentucky, Florida State, South Carolina at Mississippi State. Yes, I agree with Brad. They should be 5-0 going into October 10th. So I mentioned the NFL draft, and last week we had the aftermath and the initial reactions. Who should we bet to win Offensive Rookie of the Year? And I brought up Jadarian Price. I said, very witty in me, of me, the price might be right for Jadarian Price. Drafted 32nd overall, first round pick. Round, what was it, plus 450 or so for two running backs to go in the first round. And Price goes to Seattle at pick number 32. And then we get some footage of him this week working out there in Seattle. And maybe he gets the juices flowing like, ooh, this guy's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And the market would agree with that. The market came down a little bit. He's around plus 750 or so to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And while I was kind of juiced up about it last week, I'm not so much right now. And here's why. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN put out an article with insight of all 32 teams after the NFL draft. And this quote really jumped out to me. So think about where Seattle's running back room is at. Kenneth Walker, Super Bowl MVP, he's in Kansas City. Zach Charbonnet out till what, October or November with the ACL? But Jeremy Fowler points this out, and this is important to know because he's, what, the fourth or fifth shot to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Quote, the sense in Seattle is that first-round tailback Jadarian Price won't have to be a bell cow right away. The Seahawks have backfield depth and hope to utilize dual-threat quarterback Jalen Milroe. So that put a lot of water on the flames for me for him to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Also, the price did too. I was hoping that his would creep out a little bit. It didn't. It actually came down. And right now at DraftKings, he's the fifth shot to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Understandably so. He's a running back going to a good situation. We just most recently saw the running back win Super Bowl MVP. He's, in theory, replacing said running back. But that Jeremy Fowler quote in his article on ESPN.com this week kind of tempered the expectations for me on Jadarian Price, who is sitting there at plus 750. Hey, folks, if you're looking for live streaming and replays from nearly any thoroughbred, harness, or greyhound track out there, well, check out RTN.TV. the Racetrack Television Network. RTN has more HD content than any other streaming service and is available on TVs, PCs, tablets, smartphones, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. Just head to RTN.TV and use the promo code VSIN to get your first 5 days free.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Yes, indeed. It is Kentucky Derby Day, Game 7 Day, as well as the Boston Celtics take on the Philadelphia 76ers. Right now, as we look at that market, 8.5 across the board, 205.5, depending on what side you want to play, if you want to play the under or if you want to look over. I thought it was an interesting angle that JVT brought up regarding tonight's total in the Boston and Philadelphia game. Boston team total over as a possibility. Do you see positive regression coming from them from three? 11 of 39 from three in game five, 12 of 41 from three in game six. In games three and four, their wins in Philadelphia, 20 for 47, 24 for 53. That all being said, JVT is also on the Philadelphia 76ers plus the 8.5. Of the three game sevens in the NBA, I think the one I would look at is Orlando plus the points. Yes, their soul got ripped out yesterday. I don't know what in God's name that second half was. 19 points in the second half. If I had to play one of the three dogs, even though certainly Philadelphia is very intriguing, I think I would look at Orlando. What has Detroit shown us so far that tells us they can comfortably go out and win this game? Even though, of course, they covered the number last night. Is Orlando going to have a historically terrible run in the second half? Still, some of the numbers from that game are just incredible. 23 consecutive misses from the field, a stretch of 16 minutes and 48 seconds on the floor. And we also saw the Magic become the first team since play-by-play era has been, or since play-by-play has been tracked digitally, which is 96-97, to lose at home after leading by at least 24 points with an opportunity to win the series. So maybe they just go out and say, hey, we're screwed. I don't know. Let's just throw it out. All right. But of course, today, the big event that you all will be betting, the Kentucky Derby, the annual, for most of us, not all of us, because we have some really smart horse handicappers on this network that have come on this show, but a lot of us just kind of throwing the darts, but also listening is always an important thing. So let's play you a bunch of clips here from some of the different analysts that have joined VSiN or our own Mike Somich and Aaron Halterman on their breakdown of this race. And I think one of the more interesting angles for today is the morning line favorite, Renegade, drawing that one post. Should you be deterred by that post draw for Renegade when you're putting together your card today for the Kentucky Derby? Here's Aaron Halterman and Mike Somich earlier this week.
What's your take here on Renegade drawing the one and his race style that you expect now that he's in that post position?
I think he's in big trouble. I'm not going to dance around it. I think he is. We've seen horses with similar styles of him not have great trips at all from the rail, even with the new gate. So I think he's in trouble. I think he has to drop back. You might say, well, look, he was going to drop back anyway, but I think he's forced now. I think he's getting pushed back. I think he's getting a lot of dirt in his face. I think horses are crossing over him, and I think it's going to be a big problem.
All right, so there was Aaron Halterman's breakdown of Renegade, the one post for the morning line favorite for the Kentucky Derby. Eddie Olchuk, veteran horse handicapper, and of course, NHL analyst, was on with Mitch and Paul yesterday on Follow the Money, and his eyes are gravitating towards the 15 horse in emerging market today.
My pick, number 15, emerging market for Chad Brown and Flavien Prat. Horses only run two times, Mitch, and the horse has won both races. He won a big stake race in Louisiana back about 6 weeks ago. I don't think the connections, if the horse wasn't doing very well, I don't think that they would take a shot with a horse that has so little experience. Most of these horses have run three, four, five, six times. He's only run twice. He's only run twice this year. But what we've seen here recently is that you don't have to start as a two-year-old. You don't have to run the previous year in order to get ready for the Kentucky Derby. Horses are coming to hand a little bit faster. I think they're a little bit more experienced for whatever reason. And I think trainers and owners are being a little bit more aggressive. So right now, emerging market is on the board at, he is getting played, which I like is a good thing. He's 11-1 right now.
All right, so there you go. Eddie Olchuk giving us his breakdown. He likes emerging market, the 15 horse, to be on top of the card today. And it does feel like, and I asked this to Ed DeRosa, it feels like this is a pretty wide open Derby field. And he agreed with that. And he also agreed that 15 Emerging Market was a horse that he liked. Another horse that has been mentioned a lot, and we'll hear from Frank Carulli, who Matt Eumanns terms Pimlico Frank. He was a odds maker at Pimlico in Maryland for many years. But before we hear from Frank, let's hear from Mike Somich on Chief Wallaby, because Chief Wallaby, the 12 horse, is one that has been brought up a number of times. Drew Dinsick earlier in the show, keying in on the 12 horse, Chief Wallaby. What is Mike Somich's breakdown of the 12 horse Chief Wallaby?
Chief Wallaby is the most talented horse in this field. There's some issues with Chief Wallaby, though. I'm going to be first and foremost, like, he's a little bit of a head case. We're adding blinkers, which has never worked before in the Kentucky Derby. Now, the horses that have added blinkers in the past, generally not very good horses, and so you kind of have to take that stat with a grain of salt. But if you go back and you watch his debut, he's an absolute monster. And then you go back and you watch his first prep race down in Florida, would have won the race had he worn blinkers. He kind of got to the lead and then slowed down a little bit. You go back, you watch the Florida Derby. He is the most talented horse in that race, more talented than Commandment, more talented than Puma, but he was unwilling to split horses down the stretch when he actually got out into the clear. That's why we're adding blinkers here. He should love the mile and a quarter distance. A mile and a half is not a problem going down the line. If he puts it all together, he is the best horse in this race. You're betting on whether or not he puts it together on Saturday, though.
It's a pretty interesting analysis, right? He's the best horse, but as Mike Somich said, maybe a bit of a head case. So keep that in mind of Chief Wallaby, who once again, Drew Dinsick, he is going to key in on the 12 horse. He really likes Chief Wallaby. He's going to have him atop a number of his cards. All right, final piece of sound I wanted to play for you guys here regarding the Kentucky Derby and best bets for today. And plenty more best bets are coming, especially with a special edition of At the Track, the road to the Kentucky Derby. That will lead you up to and take you through the race, and that'll be hosted by Patrick Maher along with Mike Somich. Let's hear from Frank Carulli as he was on VSiN Primetime Thursday night. Veteran horse handicapper, veteran odds maker as well when it came to the horses, and he gave us his card, which did not include the 9 horse, the Puma. So it is interesting to note, because the 9 horse, the Puma, was scratched earlier this morning, which was changing and altering some of the cards that were out there, including our own Mike Somich and Aaron Halterman. Both had to tweak their cards, but Frank Carulli didn't have the 9 on his card. So let's break down what he had for the Kentucky Derby.
I did a $100 bankroll, hoping that's not asking too much. 20 win in place, Chief Wallaby, $7 exact, Chief Wallaby and Further Ado on top. I'm going to put Renegade in the 2 spot, the forgotten horse, so to speak. And while in my mind, I think that's a chalk exact, it's really not, because they're all decent odds right now, 5-1 being the lowest. The trifecta, I was just trying to throw 3 long shots in second. If 2 of those shorter priced horses run 1-2, I was changing it all day. I'm not crazy about that. Ticket 7-11-15, the Japanese horse, 1 of the 3 in leg 3 in the Chad Brown horse Emerging Market.
There you go. So Frank Carulli breaking it down for you. The Kentucky Derby today, always a fun day. As we heard, the conditions should be ideal for the horses in the mid-60s. As Ed DeRosa pointed out, conditions maybe for the patrons, not as ideal for them, maybe a little chillier than some would hope. But for the horses, should be good. As Drew Dinsick pointed out, firm and fast is the course down there at the Derby. Here you go, once again, showing you the odds as they continue to move a little bit. We've had 4 total horses scratched, including the latest, the Puma. And I thought Drew Dinsick pointed out he was kind of hoping the Puma would still be in the race for the hope that maybe the Swifties would get in on the 9 horse and bring that number down. But at the end of the day, the Puma was scratched. What horse am I going to go for? I guess I'll ride with Chief Wallaby, the 12 horse. So many people here on the show have given us some great insight. Chief Wallaby, the 12. I thought the 18 as well, certainly of interest as well at Further Ado. But with no further ado, we will turn the page over to Ready, Set, Bet. Matt Brown and Dustin Sweetelson. Don't worry, Mike Somich will be on at 4 p.m. Eastern with a special edition of VSiN at the Track, the road to the Kentucky Derby. It'll be Patrick Maher and Mike Somich. So we'll see for a second straight year. Can he do it? Can he get the superfecta? It does feel like it'll be quite the challenge today. Let's go 12. Chief Wallaby, let's bring it home for us here today. Thanks to everyone who joined us. Thanks to Luke, my producer, and our entire production team doing an awesome job as they always do. Thanks to Drew Dinsick, Brian Barrett, Mike Palm, Ed DeRosa, and Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Tim Murray. Dustin and Matt up next.